Welcome to the Religious Feminism Podcast. I'm excited about our guest today from FITNA, that's Feminist Islamic Troublemakers of North America, and I will let my guests introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Zara Khan. I'm an aerospace engineer by day, and I fight the patriarchy in my free time through an organization I co-founded called FITNA, which stands for the Feminist Islamic Troublemakers of North America, as April mentioned.
Hi, everyone. My name is Shahnaz Akhani. I am I'm an assistant professor of religion at Mercer University in Georgia. And so I teach by day, and then I fight the patriarchy kind of by night, which I do all day long as well. I teach courses in gender and in religion. And I'm the other co-founder, or the second co-founder, of FITNA, and I love all things feminism.
And I'm April Young Bennett, and fight the patriarchy whenever I can also. And so I'm really excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about FITNA. Why did you start it? What does it do?
So originally we were having a conversation about how we needed a place for feminist Muslims to come together. And it started out kind of as a joke. We said, wouldn't it be great to have a conference one day called the FITNA conference that we go to? And I'll explain that in a minute. So FITNA in Arabic is translated variously as like corruption, sedition, temptation, discord. And it's usually a charge that's leveled at feminists by some people in the Muslim community, and sometimes all women are labeled as a fitna for men. And so we wanted to kind of take that term and redefine it. And we're defining it to mean constructive disruption in the Muslim community around gender issues. So we took the name, and then we came up with a name that fit the acronym, and I proposed it, and a lot of people thought it would be a really fun idea to have a group like that where we could all talk and collaborate. So we started it about 3 years ago. And we have about 5,000 online members on our Facebook group now. And that's why we started it.
1,000 people fast.
And I think it's the future of Islamic feminism.
That is wonderful. So troublemakers in the acronym, but also FITNA itself kind of means troublemaker, right?
Yes. Corruption, chaos, all things bad, and women were supposed to be the cause of it historically.
Let's talk about some of the positive things that you value about your faith community first.
So one of the things that I love about it is the focus on community. And I, as a Muslim woman and as a Muslim person, community is very important to Islam and to Muslims generally. And so ever since I found this Muslim feminist community, which I found online, it's been one of the most empowering and most beautiful things that I continue to experience. So that's something that I definitely value within my faith.
I guess one of the things that I value is, at least theoretically, all Muslims have access to interpreting and being part of like defining the faith. In practice, it doesn't quite work out that way. But in theory, there's things like all our daily prayers. You don't have to go to the mosque for those. You can do them in your own home. If you have two or more people, one person can lead the prayers, and that counts as kind of a congregation. I think that's really empowering as a lay person who's not an expert, that I've had the chance to lead prayers, and I found that really empowering in my faith. So that's one thing that, like I said, in practice, it doesn't quite work out that way, especially for women. But in theory, everybody has access to that, and I'd like to see more of that in the community.
Yeah. Can I also add to that? There's this really, really important emphasis on social justice or radical justice in Islam. And I think of, so the Prophet Muhammad, for example, when he came in the 7th century, many of the changes that he brought, they were pretty radical for his time, for his community. Not necessarily universally, which many Muslims love to claim, but they were pretty radical. I mean, the kinds of, there was this insistence on social equality, on gender justice. And I take that to be applicable to the 21st century as well. I genuinely believe that if Muhammad were alive in this century, he would support something like female-led prayer. He would support same-sex relations and so on. Because that's just the call of the day. That's what justice looks like in our time. And so that emphasis, the fact that we have something like that within the tradition, within our founders, you know, within the founder's lifestyle himself, and also the fact that something like public, the idea of a public good, is actually one of the sources of Islam. And every time I think about that, I get goosebumps that Islam is that theoretically, because again, this that does not necessarily happen in practice, and you know, there has to be a conversation on what who defines what is public good and what is not. But for the purpose of a public good, Islam can, scholars and lay Muslims can disagree with a particular idea and change it and be like, this is what's necessary right now in our time for our community.
Tell me a little bit about what you value about feminism and your feminist community.
For me, it's just, I feel less alone, that I'm not fighting this by myself, or like there'd been things that had been bothering me for a long time. Some people in the feminist community, especially the co-founders of Fitna, they pointed me towards things like women scholars of Islam who'd written on these topics and explored these in great detail. And that's been very educational for me. And it's very affirming that I'm not alone in thinking about, you know, these ideas, and that there is a lot of basis in scripture for some of the stuff, or there's basis in the scripture for tackling some of the sexist things that were bothering me about my faith community earlier. So, and then in the online community, it's just, it's a great place for, I don't feel personally comfortable at a lot of mosques because of the kinds of things they're teaching. But the online community for me, the feminist community, has been really a place where I do find my Muslim community.
Yeah, same for me. And it's always interesting because it's online. I meet the most amazing Muslim feminists online. I meet the most brilliant, the most social justice oriented feminists online, and then I meet them in person whenever I get a chance. So that sort of the solidarity, that sisterhood that's there. And I think for me also, the fact that some of them, we can disagree on visceral levels about even how to do justice work, right? Or how to do activism. Or we might even disagree theologically, but we can still, like, we still work together and we still have the most, I don't know, beautiful times together. And that core notion of justice just does not die away from our togetherness. So that sisterhood is something that I find very beautiful and important in our community.
So tell me a little bit about the status of women within your faith and how it might vary.
You know, this question of the status of women in any religious tradition or in any faith is always very complicated, because it depends on so many different factors. American Muslim women have completely different concerns than like a particular village in Pakistan or a city in Pakistan, or the women of a particular city or any place anywhere in the world. And so it depends on class, it depends on gender, it depends on sexual orientation, it depends on experiences with patriarchy. So different generations of Muslim women will have different expectations from Islam. And they also might have different ideas of what Islam is and is not. So it's a very hard question to answer. But there are some very serious misogynistic issues that are happening in our communities, as in any patriarchy, in any patriarchal community around the world. So something like women's spaces in mosques, right? In many countries, women are not even allowed to go to mosques. In other countries, they are. And their space in the mosque is really beautiful, and they're accommodated very, very fairly. And in other places, they can go to the mosque, but their spaces are not, the accommodations aren't fair. So that's one of the issues, one of the ways in which we're not treated fairly in our communities. But in terms of Islam, because if the question is about experience, like how do we experience, or what is our status like in our communities versus theoretically in the Islamic tradition or in Islam, these are very different questions. And so in Islam, for example, women do have access to the mosque and they're supposed to be accommodated fairly. Women do have a voice. Women historically, we know that they corrected men publicly, right? But doing that right now and doing that in specific communities or mosques, it comes with unintended consequences. of being silenced, for example. So I do see Islam. I do think that, and I firmly believe that in the faith itself, which I'm a scholar in, women have historically been treated. Theoretically, women have there is this emphasis on gender justice, on equality, on social justice. But in practice, it's missing often. And a part of it is because we don't necessarily agree on what justice is and should look like, or what equality is, or whether we even need equality. But also, even if we disagree on those, on definitions of those topics, of those matters, women aren't necessarily treated well in many places around, in many Muslim communities. And it is sometimes attributed to Islam by the people who are perpetrators of that injustice. And in other cases, they might even acknowledge that Islam doesn't support that, like domestic violence. It has no place in any religion. But people will still do it. And we know that it's a question of power and just sort of not holding, you know, people who perpetrate domestic violence accountable for that. So the status of women, theoretically there is justice. Theoretically there is fairness. There are supposed to be fair accommodations. In reality, not so much. If that answers the question at all.
That's one thing I've seen a lot when I talk to people of different faiths, and that's true in my own too, that the theology lends itself to a beautiful sense of social justice and equality, but then because it is a patriarchy in practice, that's not what happens.
Right. And like one of the best examples of this is something like women have equal access to the scriptures, right? Like theoretically speaking, both men and women are supposed to have equal access to the scriptures. Women can be and have been scholars of Islam. Women taught the Prophet Muhammad, and women were his students. His wives were some of the main teachers of Islam as well. But then in practice, over the centuries of Islam after Muhammad's death, the ideas of religious authority become something like you have to go to a particular school to get training. You have to study for a certain amount of time. You have to study with person X, person Y, person Z. And especially if they're all men, and especially if it requires being away from home as a woman, and if you have kids, right? Just realistically, this doesn't end up working out for women. And so the standards are kind of, the system is designed in a way sometimes, I guess, to hold women back. And to deny women the space and access to authority and to become authority figures. But theoretically, you know, they're supposed to have equal access to the religion.
What are some of the things you're working toward?
So I think that's also a very broad question, and we can't claim to speak for the entire feminist movement within Islam. And like, as Shehnaz mentioned, it's also different for different communities and different countries. So here in the US, like one of the problems that we initially started tackling even before we started Fitna was all male panels at Muslim conferences and mosques, for example. That's something that, as you probably know, is not really related to one religion or field. It's across fields. In my own field in aerospace, there's very few women, and we see all male panels all the time as well. So that's one thing that we've been tackling, both through calling people out when they have all male panels. We started a pledge for men to sign, male speakers, including imams, to sign saying they wouldn't participate in an all-male panel and would suggest women in their stead or to be added. So we've had some success with that. So that's one of the things that we've been working on. And another thing that we've been working on is really this idea that Shehnaz mentioned of like, there have been women scholars, but there's a question of authority. And so what we've been, and so a lot of the times they're not represented well in Muslim spaces, even though they exist. So we're trying to work on either holding events or making videos and other educational material for people to have access to the works of Muslim feminist scholars. So a couple of years ago, we held a conference on Islamic feminism, where we had all women panels, all within one city. And so we were able to find so many women who were experts in Islamic feminism locally. And so we held that. And so that's one of the things that we're doing. And right now we're working on inviting scholars to make videos, because that's how a lot of the young people engage with Islam, and also with people being so dispersed, it's easier to access information about Islamic feminism online. So we want to make that more available to people. And so a lot of the Muslim feminist scholars will write academically, but we want to bring that knowledge out in a form that's more accessible to like lay Muslims.
What are some of the barriers that you've found as you've strived to reach your goals?
Some of the barriers, and it keeps coming back to the question of authority and who gets to speak on Islam legitimately. So one of the biggest issues that we're constantly faced with is a lot of Muslims will just refuse to take us seriously, to take our ideas and our opinions seriously, or our interpretations of Islam seriously, because we weren't trained as scholars, as traditionalist scholars. We weren't trained in a seminary, and our opinions are, and or because we don't wear the in the case of the founders of Fitna, we don't cover our hair, and so we're not legitimate Muslim women to begin with. We're not practicing the very basic thing that is so essential to Islam. Apparently, that's not true, and so we're not taken seriously because supposedly we don't know what we're talking about. Never mind that we might have PhDs in both Sadia, our other co-founder, and I have PhDs in Islamic studies, but that doesn't matter to them. And so that's the biggest and most frustrating obstacle that we just constantly have to deal with, and having to then repeat conversations on authority and conversations on all male panel, or all, you know, just men deciding what is proper Islam and what is proper behavior and dress code for a Muslim woman. It's just, you know, it's incredibly frustrating to have those conversations. And so sometimes I'm not even gonna, you know, respond to this, but that's definitely an obstacle.
Oh, I just want to like correct one thing. So I do wear a head covering when out in public, but I'm not a scholar, but I mean, that's definitely one of the things that I've seen when I've said, look, there are all these women scholars, and people will say, well, they don't cover their head, so they're not legit. And that's just, it's such a small part of the faith, and it's blown up way out of proportion, so that it's a basic requirement for being a scholar. So that's definitely one of the barriers, as Shehnaz said, and then also in general with the qualifications, they sort of keep moving the goalposts. So there's men with similar qualifications who are considered scholars in the Muslim community, but because they don't challenge the traditional patriarchal ideas that some of the seminaries teach. So because of that, even though they don't themselves have a seminary background, they get invited to speak in mosques and other Muslim spaces and are introduced as scholars, whereas women, because they're challenging these patriarchal ideas, even with the same qualifications, they're not considered scholars.
Can you tell me about some of the progress that you've made since you began Fitna?
I guess for us, like as Fitna, one of the first things, like I said, when we started, we were kind of joking that we wanted to go to this conference called the Fitna Conference. And so I think within like 6 to 8 months of us starting, we were able to organize one where we had a really great audience, and we had a lot of attendance, and we had, we introduced people to the idea of Islamic feminism who may not have heard it before. And so that's one of our successes there. And then the other things, and I also want to introduce some other women doing some great work. There's this great blog called Side Entrance by our friend Hind Maki. And she's been working on, it's called Side Entrance because a lot of the mosques, women will have a separate entrance to the mosque, and it's often not the main entrance. And so she started this blog to document instances of issues for women's access to the mosque. And so she's had a lot of success with working with mainstream Muslim organizations and working with mosques to improve women's spaces. And she started out as a blog, but she works with this umbrella organization called the Islamic Society of North America. They were able to put out a statement about a women-friendly mosques initiative. And as part of that, Hind goes to a lot of mosques and does workshops on how to improve access to the mosque. And so that's, another part of women's feminism here in the U.S. that's been, it's getting successful slowly, but a lot of people are now talking about why so many women in the U.S. Are unmasked, And so they want more women to come to the mosques, and they're worried about young people not coming to the mosques. And so one of the things that they're trying to tackle is how to make things more women friendly that way.
Do you have any advice for people who are working towards more feminist policies or theologies within their own religions?
Reach out, seek support from people who, especially within your faith, who already exist and are already doing some work that you just may not be aware of. I didn't know until 2011 that there were other Muslim feminists. I had read some books and I figured, but I just didn't know there was an actual, like, there was a huge group of Muslim feminists around the world. And when I did find it, it was just, I had this blog and it was being read by different people, but I accidentally came across a Muslim feminist blog, and then I accidentally another one after that. And it was just, it was a life-changing revelation that, oh, there is a huge movement out there. And then that way you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can just turn to, you can reference each other and you can say, hey, she's written about this, and this other person has written about this. And that can just, it just makes it so much easier. It also makes it fun. And so I would highly encourage just, you know, reaching out and finding a community and becoming a part of that.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, for me, I don't have any particular advice with that. I guess one of the things that I find interesting about, like, interfaith feminism is looking at other faiths to see if they're tackling similar problems, because that to me also underscores why we may have, like, very different theological beliefs, but we're tackling the same problem within our communities. And so to me, that's really a signal that it's more about the patriarchy and less about theology. So I think looking at stuff like that and looking at what fights other people are fighting with, or other women are fighting in their communities, I think that can be very powerful in figuring out, in sort of disentangling theology from patriarchy within your own faith community.
That's true. That's a really important point. It turns out that a lot of the stuff that, a lot of the things that Muslim feminists are fighting for right now, Christians and Jewish feminists have been, they have been fighting for the same things or for similar things for hundreds of years as well. And in some cases they've succeeded, and we can learn from that and see what worked and what didn't work, and just apply those techniques and see what we can get as well. That's a really good point.
Tell us a little about how to join FITNET.
Yes. You just go to Facebook and you type in Feminist Islamic Troublemakers of North America, or just FITNA. And the group, both the group and the page come up, and join the group instead. And we'll look at, and please answer the questions. There are some questions to sort of weed out any potential trolls. So answer the questions and tell us why you want to join, or, you know, whatever the questions are. And then we look into your profile and we accept you. And we have some really, really interesting conversations. So it's very easy to join. And you can just join as, you know, an ally of FITNA instead, if you're not a Muslim.
Thank you. And I will make sure to include that link in our episode notes.
Excellent.